We're doing the book of Shmuel. We're up to what they call the 28th chapter, the end of what they call Shmuelei. And in Judaism, we only have one book of Shmuel. There's no Shmuelei and Shmuelbi. Shaul has raised Shmuel from the dead. We discussed last week two opinions among the Gaonim as to whether it was all an act, whether the woman was fooling Shaul or it was real. Two opinions as to what actually took place here. And Shaul is very weak, and the woman gives him to eat, and she prepares him some meat, and she prepares him some matzos, and he and his servants eat. They come back to the camp, they go to war, and David has been sent back to Ziklag. So early in the morning, he is sent off before war breaks out to come back. So they come back to Ziklag. And when they reach the area of Ziklag, which is in the south, not far from Amalek, they discover that the whole place has been burnt down. Their families are gone, their wives, their children, everyone's gone. And what they don't know is if anyone's alive. So David's men are very upset. They come to the city and they see that everything's gone. So they all start crying. And they cry so bitterly that they have no more strength to cry. And David's wives have been captured. And David sees that the people are ready to kill him, his own men. They're very upset over their families. And to my mind, this is the most meaningful pasuk in all of Tanakh. You know, every person finds a pasuk that speaks to them. I always found this pasuk to be the most meaningful one. David has lived a life where this is for sure, to my mind, the harshest moment of his life at this point. His parents and his siblings have been killed. His father-in-law wants him dead. He went into enemy territory, and now in enemy territory, his whole family and his men's family are taken. His own men are ready to kill him. The families that he was entrusted with, his family and their families, have all either been killed or captured. And at this moment, at this juncture in his life, what does it say about David? Vayitchazek David b'Hashem Elokav. David took strength in Hashem, his God. I always think back to this pasuk because I think this pasuk is a guiding pasuk for all of David's life. At the most difficult hours, a person can do one of two things. He can get upset at Hashem, and that's understandable. He could turn to Hashem for his help. And that's not only understandable, it's correct. And the pasuk teaches us, Vayitchazek, David became stronger, b'Hashem Elokav, with Hashem his God. That pasuk, to my mind, is the pasuk about life. It's the pasuk about what a person is supposed to do in life. Life throws hardships at us, and you always remind yourself, Hashem created those hardships. But Vayitchazek David b'Hashem Elokav. Yeah.
Do we have background on how David became such a master of emunah? Like if he was born that way, or if there were things that allowed him to grow in his emunah? Or just the background, I guess.
That's a good question for Thursday night. Deserves a long answer. So, probably that's the plan. So David asks the Kohen Eviatar. He says, "Let's take the apron. Let's ask Hashem. Should I pursue this battalion?" Will I get them? And Hashem says, you will. And you're going to save them. This is unusual. Ordinarily, you only get one answer. You ask Hashem one question, you get one answer. Here David asked, and he gets two answers at a time. From here, Chazal learned that at a time of danger, when the minutes matter, then Hashem makes exceptions. He's willing to answer two questions at a time. So David takes his 600 men, and they pursue the Philistines. Now, some of the people tire out, and so 200 remain behind by the river, and he continues with his 400 men. as they're running, they find an Egyptian man. They give him to eat, they give him to drink, and they give him some dried fruits. He's half dead when they find him. It's been 3 days that he hasn't eaten or drank anything. One of the amazing things I saw when my grandfather was ill is that a person can live more than 3 days without eating or drinking. I'm not saying there won't be permanent damage to all kinds of vital organs, but they can live. I always thought that a person can't live, and no, a person can live. My grandfather in his final days, I think, went over a week without eating or drinking. So he wasn't bad, he wasn't acting, and eventually something gave and he passed away. But his final 10 days, so I think he went almost a week without eating anything. So that's the Egyptian is lying there for 3 days and three nights and he hasn't eaten or drank anything. And they give him a little bit of water and a little bit of bread and a little bit of dried fruits. And he's rejuvenated. And David asks him, "Who are you?" That means David, when he fed him, did not yet know if this man had vital information for David or not. So David's on the run, and they see a man half dead, obviously not Jewish, and they take care of him. But you're in a rush. Why are you taking care of him? Ah, we learned something from David. This man will prove to have vital information for them. And he tells them, "I was a slave for an Amaleki man, and I became sick. So my master left me here to die, to starve to death. It's been 3 days now that I've been lying here, starving to death. I came with them, and I attacked with them. I was a slave with them as they attacked Ziklag. And they burned down Ziklag. And then they headed back to their home base, and they dropped me off here when they saw I was sick." So David asks him, "Will you guide us down to where they're camping?" And the Egyptian tells him, "Promise me by Hashem that you won't kill me and you won't use me as collateral, as a bargaining chip, and I'll take you down." So he says, "Be'lokim," by the potent one. Maybe he didn't know Hashem's name. He says, "By the potent one." So that's also an interesting point. He's half dead, and he sees how humane David is. He feels he can bargain with him. So he takes them down. And they see the Amaleki spread out over the... They're all sprawled out, eating, drinking, partying, enjoying the loot they just captured. And David and his men see them. They're not prepared for his attack. And so David attacks. The pasuk says he beat them from Neshef to the evening to the next morning. What is Neshef? Neshef is either the break of dawn or twilight of evening. So either the war took place from twilight of the evening through the night through the next morning, which was a tactic David often used to attack as nightfall came, and the receiving end couldn't see clearly who was attacking and how many were attacking. Only 400 men escape. He wipes out the whole Amaleki camp, and he takes back all the men, and they lost no one among their children and the loot. David brings everything back. So now he takes back all this loot, and his men are in awe of what he's just accomplished, and they say everything here belongs to David. They come back to the 200 men that hadn't had strength to continue with them, and those men come to greet David. And some of the people among David, the pasuk calls them evil people without the yoke of heaven, and they said if they didn't come to war, they don't get back any of their money. They only get the kids. They didn't fight the war with us. And David says, it doesn't work that way. Hashem gave us back, and he allowed us to be victorious. And those who go down to war get the same wages as those who stayed behind and protected our goods. So David makes this rule, and Chazal say this was a rule that would always follow the people to war. That the people who guarded the home base would split the loot with the people who went out to war. And Chazal say this rule David learned from Avraham Avinu. That when Avram went to war, it says he brought some loot for Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. They didn't go to war with him. When the king of Sodom tells him, you take the loot, give me just my men, David says, I don't want anything from a shoestring, michut v'ad shochnal, from a string to a shoestring, from a string to a shoe strap. I don't want anything. But you have to give me the wages. I could forgo everything that you owe me. But the men who watched my camp, you have to pay them. The lads, so that's where David learned that from. So David comes back, he sends the loot, he sends some of it back to the elders of Judea and to his friends, and whatever loot he captured that did not belong to his own men, he sends around to the different parts of Israel, and he is slowly creating in these months that he lives in Ziklag, and he's sending loot all around to Judea. He is actually creating and forming alliances with his own tribe, Yehuda, which will be the first to appoint him as king. So he's sending it to his neighbors. He is slowly empowering himself. Now the Philistines, during all this time, have also been going to war. And the Jews lose the war. And Mount Gilboa, which is right near Beit Shan is situated at the foot of Mount Gilboa, the mountains of Gilboa. So on Mountain Gilboa, we have many people being killed. The Philistines are shooting, their archers are knocking down Jews right and left. And Shaul and his sons are standing there fighting valiantly, and the Philistines recognize them, and they start shooting at them. And Shaul's sons fall. And Shaul is alone. And he's trying to fight them. Now Shaul's strength is also with the bow and arrow. His tribe, Binyamin, their strength is with the bow and arrow, with a rock sling. And Shaul sees that he's mortally wounded and he's about to die. So he's scared that the Philistines will capture him and torment him to death. He sees there's no way he's going to live at this point. And so Shaul says to the lad, his arms bearer, he says, do me a favor, draw your sword and kill me, because otherwise they will torment me to death. And the lad was scared. So Shaul positions his sword opposite his neck, and he throws himself down and slits his own neck and dies. And when his arms bearer sees that Shaul is dead, so then he does the same. He figures he's done. So Shaul dies with his three sons over there. Let's open a Shulchan Aruch and see if what Shaul did was correct. We do have laws in Shulchan Aruch about whether a person is allowed to kill themselves. So let's open the end of the Shulchan Aruch. Just one second. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Mem Hei tells us Hamabed Atzmo Ladat, someone who commits suicide, Hamabed Atzmo, destroys himself, Ladat, knowingly. En Mitaskini Mol Chol Davar, we don't deal with him. Ven Mitablim Alav, we don't mourn over him. Ven Maspidin Oto, we don't eulogize him. Velo Korin, we don't tear over him. Velo Cholzin, we don't move our shoes over him. We just bury him. Aval Omdim Alav Beshura V'Omrim Alav Katavanim Chol Davar Shukvot L'Chaim. We honor his family, but nothing is done because we view it as he's done something very disgraceful and prohibited, and so we don't give him the honors of anything. Ezu me'abed atzmo ladat. What's considered committing suicide? Kigon shamar arei ule l'rosh hagag. He says he's going up to the rooftop and he's going to jump off. And they see him storming up to the rooftop. They see him as he's in pain, and he says, I'm going to do it. Right. And then he jumps off and dies. So then even though you don't know, he might have changed his mind the last minute, but as far as we know, he committed suicide. But what happens if he says, I'm going to go up there and commit suicide, jump off the roof? And then a day later, they find him hanging from a tree. Or they find him on a sword. So you don't know what happened to him. He said he was going to throw himself off the roof. And that didn't happen a minute later. So what happened a day later that you find him hanging on a tree? You don't know. So if you don't know, so then we assume that he died like everyone else. And we deal with him and we bury him. So that's step one. So we just learned that when a person commits suicide, we look down at him to the point where we don't even mourn his death. We don't give him the basic honors. We honor his family, we don't honor the deceased. A person has to know it's prohibited to commit suicide, and a person loses everything they built in this world. And sometimes just that knowledge gives the person the strength not to commit suicide. It's very important to know you're not allowed to commit suicide. It's one of the worst things you can do. It is prohibited, and it destroys everything for a person in this world and the world to come. Not allowed to commit suicide. Worse than that. Katana ma'amed atzmo ladat. What happens if it's a child who committed suicide? Chashuv kishelo ladat. We treat it as though they didn't know any better. We don't look at a child and say he should have known better. No. If he's a minor, he's not yet 13, he's not yet bar mitzvah. From our end, we consider that as he didn't know. The same is true if he's an adult and he had no choice. He is forced to it. He is under a tremendous amount of pressure that he couldn't have done differently. Like King Saul, says the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, we look at Shaul HaMelech, that he didn't have a choice. He saw the Philistines charging in on him. So the Shulchan Aruch gives us two points here. He doesn't say Shaul was right. The Shulchan Aruch does not give Shaul credence and say, yeah, that was okay, Shaul. He says, we won't judge him incorrectly. We won't say he's done wrong, because it's like a minor. So the Shulchan Aruch gives us a very, very difficult ruling here. Shulchan Aruch doesn't say Shaul was okay, he was going to die anyways. Shaul was okay, he was mortally wounded. There are commentaries who are of that opinion, that Shaul knew it was a matter of minutes till he would die. He was entitled to say, I'd rather die sooner and not suffer at the hands of the Philistines. That's not what the Shulchan Aruch writes. Shulchan Aruch says, if an adult commits suicide, he doesn't say, if it was King Saul, then he didn't commit suicide. He says, no, if an adult commits suicide and he was forced like King Saul, so then we don't withhold anything from him. He doesn't say an adult is allowed to do it. The Shulchan Aruch did not say King Saul was okay in what he did. The Shulchan Aruch does not say an adult who is under tremendous pain, who knows he's going to die anyways, is permitted to do it. So that means whether King Saul was allowed to or not is another question, and the Shulchan Aruch is not dealing with that at this juncture. There's another siman in Shulchan Aruch that discusses what medicine must we give a sick person. What medicine can we withhold from a person? Do we have to put a person on a resuscitator? Do we have to intervene and prolong a person's life? That's a separate question. What the Shulchan Aruch is asking here is, how do we view it? Do we give him all the honors? And the answer is, we do. When a person was under duress, when a person was under pain, when a person was under very dire circumstances, from our end, we say, they can have the honors, like Shaul will have the honors, and it's our obligation. It's not our permission. Am Yisrael was punished because they didn't properly eulogize Shaul HaMelech. That means even though Shaul committed suicide, and you see the Shulchan Aruch counts it as committing suicide, he doesn't say that's not called suicide. The Shulchan Aruch does not say, well, under these circumstances, that's not suicide. He doesn't say he was going to die anyway, so it's not suicide. He says, we still owe him the honor because he was forced. And Am Yisrael is going to be punished because they don't give that honor to their king, Shaul. So, again, not to be confused with the question of whether it was permissible or not. That's a separate discussion in Halacha. If you guys want, we could have a class on that. But that's a separate discussion in Halacha. What he's discussing here... What he's discussing here is that we still owe him the honor of a proper eulogy, which is what we will see now about Shaul, that Shaul deserves a proper eulogy. And so we'll have to pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem. Shaul has passed away, his children have passed away, the Jewish people have lost the war, Shaul's arms bearer has committed suicide with him, and where we pick up,
what?
It would seem that way. It would seem that he knew he was dead, that they were closing in on him. But again, we have two questions. One question is it permissible to do that? We haven't learned that yet. The second question is, do we give him a eulogy? We say, under such circumstances, we have to give him a proper eulogy. And so now we're up to this point. We'll pick up here, Be'ezrat Hashem.